May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Kuuk Audio Podcast. I'm D.C. Puba of Kuuk Audio and Kuuk Archives, preserving the legacy of Shunryu Suzuki and those whose paths crossed his, and anything else that comes to mind. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable, free from economic hardship, and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. So today we have a guest, John Joseph Roshi, a teacher in the Pacific Zen Institute. And I did a Zoom meeting with his group recently, what they call the Zen Luminaries series. And Peter Coyote's going to be on next week, and he talks about that, or I think on the 28th. And is that next week? It's getting close. Now, we say this in the podcast, but to remind you here, to attend the Zen Luminary Series with Peter Coyote on the 28th at 6 p.m. Pacific time, go to pacificzen.org, and it'll be clear on the homepage there what to do. Well, one thing I want to say about John Joseph is that when I did the Zoom meeting with them, I talked to him a lot. Several times, long phone calls before him, and he really had all his ducks in order, as they say, and but he was quite knowledgeable about the Suzuki Roshi, the Suzuki Roshi Archive, Kuuk.com. It's definitely part of his practice. I was impressed. I didn't realize that. Yeah, well, anyway, you'll hear. He's had a very diverse life and study. Well, anyway, you're going to hear from John Joseph. After we've had our pause to meditate, we'll give him a call. So when you hear the bell, hit pause, if you're of such a mind, and meditate or whatever for as long as you wish, and when you're ready to come back, hit unpause, and we'll be here to hit the bell to end the meditation or whatever, and we'll give John Joseph a call.
Hello,
John Joseph. How are you doing?
Hi, David Chadwick. David. Hi, Chadwick.
Yeah. Yeah. So, here we are again.
Indeed.
But when did we talk? I did that podcast. I did that Zoom meeting with your group a week 10 days ago or something.
It was the 28th, so it was almost 3 weeks ago. Yeah, we're going to have Peter Coyote in another 8 or 10 days. Yeah.
Oh, I want to join. Hey, well, tell us what it is, and or is it open to anybody?
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the Zen Luminary series?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's open to everyone.
Yeah, well, tell about the Zen Luminary series. You're a teacher with the Pacific Zen Institute, which was founded by my dear friend and benefactor, John Tarrant. And you run the Zen Luminaries series, and accidentally, I was one of the guests. That was great. I really had a good time.
We had a great time, and people really loved it. And you know, the words that came back time and time again were authenticity, and David is, you know, wholly himself. And you know, when we can show that, you know, in our lives and in our practice, people feel that they can do that, right? That they can be authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Tell us how we can join. How we can hear about Peter Coyote, for instance. What's the date and what do you do?
Right, right. So the date is the 28th, Monday, the 28th. It's going to start at 6 Pacific Daylight Time, 28th of March. And then we go for about an hour and a half. And what you do is you go to the pacificzen.org website, and you click on events or you click on calendar, and you'll find that for that night. And then when you click through that, it'll have a sign up. And we ask that non-members make a donation of, I think it's about $10 or so. And members, I think it's free, but it's actually free for everybody if you can't afford it. And so it's a great forum. And we started it last October, September, October, with Thomas Juho Kirchner, who was a translator of Linji and the Book of Linji. And he basically took over 200-300 pages of notes and notebooks from Ruth Fuller Sasaki that had been moldering Daitokuji for years. And so he took that over and he finished up. He really cleaned up Zen dust, right? And it's just a tremendous document, which I use every week. Linji, the book, the record of Linji. And then he also did Entangling Vines. And then, you know, Thomas Kirchner was a monk for about a decade at Kenchoji. And I don't know, he might have been at Dyutakuji and elsewhere. And so he gave us some insight on the life of a monk, particularly a foreigner monk, which he found to be, as long as you learned your Japanese and you did what they did, you know, that you were treated the same as anyone else. And so you really seem to enjoy that monk experience.
Well, that depends on where you are being treated like everyone else.
Right. Well, you've got a little experience there too.
He was with people who were really practicing and respected his practice. And I've met him. I visited him in the temple where he lives, Katrinka, and I did. Wonderful place. God, so cool. Mm. That guy has done his homework. My God.
Yeah, he's done some great scholarly work. And he's turned out some books that are, you know, like I said, I use them all the time. I use Linji and Entangling Vines every week.
Wow. That's great. Well, now that makes me want to go back and listen to it. Can we hear archived?
Yeah, he's in the, we call Kalpa. It's Koans and Liberation Project Archives. And it's the largest, we believe, online library of koans in the world.
Wow, that is cool. Send me an email about that and I'll...
Well, if you just go to pacificzen.org, you should be able to find it just fine.
All right, give me those, the acronym. Are they letters?
Again? Yeah, K-A-L-P-A.
Oh, Kalpa, right, that's right. Huh, cool. Online koan archives or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Not so online. It's the Koan and Liberation Project Archives.
Yeah. Yeah, that is great. I want to mention something you told me that Peter Coyote said out of self-interest.
Yeah. So we will be having Peter next week, and we usually try to give an honorarium. And Peter said that we should donate to you and your project, Cuke.com and et cetera, anything that might have been going his way. So we're happy to do that.
I'm very happy you're going to do that. And you know, you told me that, you know, just a little bit ago when we were talking on WhatsApp, and I said, hey, bring that up in the podcast. So we've done that.
Yeah, sure.
Now, let's, that's good. I appreciate that. And Peter has always been a good, loyal friend.
Well, you know, for our needs, you know, with regard to the Luminary series and stuff like that, he's not only a great guy, but he really gets it, you know. And to me, I don't care if he's been an actor, a movie star, or, you know, anything, a poet. I want to talk to people who understand, you know, koans and understand Zen. And I think he does. And so he's very, very refreshing to talk to. And we were only going to talk for about 20 minutes. We ended up talking for about an hour and 15 minutes. We both had to run. And so I think we're going to finish up the conversation at some time. But we will happily have him online in about a week and a half or so on the 28th.
Oh, that's great. Well, I made a note here. All right, now tell us about yourself. What's your way-seeking mind trip? What's your where did it all start, and how did you end up where you are now? You know,
yeah,
whatever you want to say.
Well, I first started sitting Zazen when I was 17, and I was in high school. And there were about a group of about a half dozen of us. And we'd hop in the back of Dana Olvey's International Harvester pickup truck and chug up the hill in the pre-dawn on Wednesdays and Saturdays and sit at our Spanish teacher's house. And his name was Robert A. King. And he had studied under So Kyung Bo, a Korean master.
Who's, uh-huh. Where was this?
He had studied in the United States, So Kyung Bo had come to the United States and had gotten a PhD at Temple University, but he was very well known in Korea, and he was very plugged in politically and the like, and he had a system of temples and stuff like that. He never had a large following, as far as I know, in the United States, but so Bob King studied with him, and Bob is worth a podcast in and of himself. He was crippled by polio when he was a child during the Japanese occupation of Manila, where he lived. His mother was half Spanish, half Filipino, and his father American. And she had taken him back to the Philippines just before World War II, so she could be with her family. And then they were trapped in the Japanese occupation and had to suffer under that. And then he came back to the United States and became a teacher of Spanish in our high school, and he was really well-regarded.
Where?
In Walnut Creek, California, which is...
Oh, really?
East of Berkeley, Oakland, right? And
in what year was this?
This was 1972. And so we began studying and sitting, and this was really weeks after Shunyu Suzuki passed. And I started going down to Sesshin, down to Zen Center of Los Angeles, and met Maizumi Roshi and some of his head monks, and then started a period of sort of Sesshin practice down there, which lasted for several years. But after high school, rather than going to college, we were really more interested in adventuring in Alaska. And so we hitchhiked up to Southeast Alaska, or we hitchhiked up to Washington.
Who's we?
Our Zen group, our Zen friends of five guys. And
no kidding. Five.
Yeah, and then so we were not, you know, we were eating brown rice and sitting zazen and drinking green tea and hiking like, you know, madmen. And so we went up and we went to the Yukon River and we built rafts and we floated down the Yukon River. And then that winter, I lived in a cabin by myself and helped build that cabin and mushed dogs. And then I went and worked as a logger and then as a commercial fisherman for a couple seasons in Alaska. But anyway, I went down to college in Arcata and moved into the internal school and became sort of the Zen guy of a spiritual commune, essentially, is what it was. And there was a TM guy, and, you know, I was the Zen guy. There was Kung Fu classes. There were Aikido classes. And it was really great. And
I
lived there. It was called, I went to Humboldt State University, which is now Polytech Humboldt State or something. And so that was called the Internal School. And Jim, whose last name I forget right now, was the founder of that. He was a great guy. And so I lived there for a couple of years and then moved out to a daffodil farm, finished up. But at any rate, all this time we were holding session at the internal school. One of So Kyungbo's successors, Donald Gilbert, was coming up and giving retreats. And I was sort of the tanto, the head of practice for those. And I was also going down to Zen Center in Los Angeles for retreats. And then after I graduated from college, I decided to go out to Japan to study Japanese for a year, because I thought maybe I would want to, I would become an academic, and I knew you needed some good language skills. But also while in Japan, I wanted to be able to sit Zen. And when I came down from Alaska, just by chance, I met one of Eiken Roshi's former students in Nevada City in a bar. And that next Saturday, went out to Gary Snyder's ranch, Kitkidizzi, to finish up session with Bob Eiken, who was in the middle of a 5 or 7 day session at Gary Snyder's at the on the ridge. And so Eiken introduced me to, I told him I was headed out to Japan, and he introduced me to Yamada Kon, who he had studied with in Kamakura. And so I moved to Kamakura the second day I was in Japan, and I never left.
Wonderful town.
Yeah. And so I was in Kamakura for 4 years, went back to graduate school at Berkeley for 2 years, and sat with Mel Weitzman and Zen Center Los Angeles for a couple of years when I was in Berkeley. And then I went back for 4 years in Japan and continued my koan studies with Yamada Kon. And then I left Japan, and the weekend that I left, he fell down a stairway and was injured. And then he survived for about a year. But by that time I was back in California. He was unconscious pretty much. And I was in California, and I met up pretty much the second month I was in California. I met up with John Terrence and started studying with him. And that was 32 years ago. And that started the California Diamond Sangha. And then we changed the name to Pacific Zen Institute in about year 2000.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That 32 years ago. My goodness.
Yeah. It's hard to believe, right? So,
I knew John in 2000. You know, he's one of the people who read Crooked Cucumber and made some suggestions. That was earlier. Mm-hmm. That was more like 98. Yeah. Well, you were in Japan how many years?
Two different times, but all together, because I came back for graduate school, about 8 years, 7.5, 8 years.
And your Japanese got quite good. You've done, who was it you were telling me you did translating for it? Was that?
Well, I went to Sophia University, Jochi Daigaku, for 2 years of intensive Japanese, and then I spoke Japanese for that time. And when Yamada came over to the United States when I was going to graduate school, I served as his translator for some days while he was going around San Francisco visiting Zen Center. San Francisco Zen Center, and we had dinner with Dick Baker, so I got a chance to meet him. And
was that at Green's?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And beautiful sunset. It was just gorgeous evening.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he went up and he dedicated Ring of Bone Zendo and wrote a really gorgeous scroll. And I guess Ring of Bone Zendo is based on a poem that, who wrote the poem Ring of Bone?
That poet, Lew Welsh?
Lew Welsh, yeah. He was lost in the woods and assumed dead. But So it's the sound that bone makes, right? So that was Lew Welch's Ring of Bone. It's a beautiful poem. I've used it lots of times. And Yamada had thought that Ring of Bone was actually like a bone sliced, you know, thin in crosswise, you know, to make a ring like you might put on your finger or something.
Yeah,
so it's different Chinese characters and stuff, but just a little color there for you.
Oh, you mean he wrote the kanji he wrote for ring was like ring you put on your finger.
Right. Yeah. Not the sound of bone. Yeah.
Oh, that is funny. That is great. That's great. So, well, that's quite some since 72, that's quite a trajectory of your practice. So what are you doing these days? I mean, I know you're doing the Zen Luminary series, but that's just like one little thing you're doing.
Yeah. So, last 10 or 15 years, I've been largely retired from business. What happened is in Japan, I became a journalist, went back to Japan the second time as a foreign correspondent for McGraw-Hill Publications, which, you know, Business Week. But I worked for trade mags like Electronics Week and International Plastics, which actually was pretty fun. And, you know, Soil, Graham News and all that stuff. And they didn't have a lot of Japanese speakers. So I could go out in the field and get some pretty good, you know, insight into what's going on in Japanese industry and stuff. And I really enjoyed it a lot, but I was getting paid almost nothing, like $27,000 a year, you know, and the Japanese stock market was going up, and these stock market analysts who were doing pretty much the same thing I was doing was getting paid four times what I got paid. So I thought, I can do that. And I quit my journalism job and I became a financial analyst. And then I remained a financial analyst for about 20 years. And I eventually went back to the United States, worked for Montgomery Securities, worked for Kidder Peabody, moved back to New York for about 6 years, a couple of different times, and finished my career as a director of research for Solomon Smith Barney Citigroup in New York, down on Wall Street.
Wow. Wow, I didn't know anything.
And that all ended about 10 or 15 years ago. So after that, after I left business, you know, I had continued my practice and John Tarrant and I had continued to work on koans and go through the Blue Cliff record. And in fact, I went through all the koans twice, which was helpful. And I began to dedicate myself more full time to my practice, my Zen practice, and became, you know, had gotten into administration at Pacific Zen, you know, which most of us senior people have done. You know, we've rotated through as president, vice president, CFO, and all that stuff, I still remain in management a little bit, but I also teach a lot. And so about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, I was made a sensei. And then a few years after that, I was made a Roshi. And, you know, so I teach most of the retreats. You know, I'll give a talk and then I'll see people in Doksan. And I've got a couple days a week I largely dedicate to Doksan via telephone or Zoom with students. So I've got about 15 or 20 people I talk to on a regular basis. We go through, you know, the koan curriculum and stuff.
You know, my beloved wife, Katrinka, does that with David Weinstein. Oakland.
Yeah.
Your Dharma brother.
Yeah, absolutely. When we were drinking buddies in Kamakura, in fact, when I was first in Kamakura, it was just me and the Jesuits. And even though they liked to drink, I can't say that they were all that much fun. And David came, and then we became drinking buddies, and then other people from Hawaii came and stuff. So it was fun. It became a lot funner after a couple of years. David Sarasa, his wife Sarasa, who you know well, moved into my house in Oakland when he came back from Japan, which was soon after I returned from Japan. And then we were roommates for a couple of years, the three of us. And we started, we would have Zenkai. So John Tarrant would come down on weekends and do Zazenkai, you know, the Zen meetings down in our house in Oakland. And then David and Sarasa moved out, and I got married and you know, had a family, but we all stayed very close. And David was the best man at my wedding, and John read at my wedding. And so, yeah, we've known each other for a long, long time.
Wow. That's really interesting. Now, the way you and I reconnected was you invited me to be a guest on the Zen Luminaries. And, you know, I don't do lots and lots of, I'm not invited to be a guest on lots and lots of stuff, just every now and then. But one thing that was distinctly different about doing it with you is how well you planned it and how thoroughly, conversant you were with Shunyu Suzuki material. I mean, it was very impressive. Tell me, how did that all come about?
Well, a couple of things, I think. One, when I got into this business, the Zen business, 1972, there were really two books, right? There was Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and there was Three Pillars of Zen. And I read the Three Pillars of Zen, and I wanted to work with koans. I wanted that enlightenment that was promised, you know, in the Three Pillars of Zen. And that section of my book got pretty dog-eared, as you might guess, you know, for many of us. And so I pursued that, and many of the people, I didn't go study with Cap Tho, though I told you about the people that would go chugging up the hill in the truck. Some of them did study with Cap Tho back in Rochester. But instead I went to Maizumi, who was part of that lineage, and then out to Yamada, who was, you know, figured pretty prominently and is, you know, by the people at the Sanon Zendo considered pretty much the author of Three Pillars of Zen. I don't know about all that, but
who?
Yamada Kohn. But
yeah,
he worked
very
closely with Cap Tho, and then Cap Tho left Yasutani. So, you know, I've heard that Yamada was doing Doksan with Cap Tho, you know, before the split. But but anyway, the point is that I didn't pay a lot of attention to Shunyu Suzuki, and then about 3 years, decades. And then about 10 or 15 years ago, I think it was through Cuke.com that I listened to one of his lectures. And I remember it very distinctly. He must have been down at Tassajara, because there was the sound of camp jays, of you know, Blue Jays, and in the background,
Stellar's Jays.
And he was giving a talk, and I was listening, and you know, if you've been around for a while, you get pretty quickly whether somebody has something to say or not. Uh-huh. And I'm not very patient if I don't think somebody has something to say. I don't care if they've been sitting Zen for 50 years or 1 year, you know, it doesn't matter. But I thought he really had something that I hadn't appreciated before. And so I began to investigate more. I reread the Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And then I started listening to Qk.com and all your just incredible, incredible recordings and materials and stuff. So what happened with the Zen Luminary series is, you know, I've had during the pandemic, I've had a Monday night sitting with, you know, we get about 20 people plus minus for a couple of years. But I just kind of get tired of going blah, 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 you know, on Monday nights. And they probably get tired of listening to me go blah, blah, blah on Monday nights. So I decided to have some people who might be interesting that once a month, you know, we break it up a little bit. We have a speaker. And I started with a friend of mine who is a Jodo Shinshu. He's a priest in San Mateo. And then Thomas Uo Kirchner. And then I started writing people. Like, I sent Peter Hershock an email. And boom, he comes back, yes. And I send Red Pine an email, Red Pine Porter an email. He comes back, yes. And so I was surprised at how easy and how willing people were to come onto the call. And so we started to build some momentum. And your name came up very early, not only as a possible source, but also in terms of being connected to many, many people. You know, Michael Katz. You basically know everybody, David, right? So,
I've heard, you know, people tell me that through the years, yes.
So I was told by Cass and I was told by Tarrant that, you know, you got to get a hold of Chadwick. And I've known your work for a long time, and I love the Crooked Cucumber and Thank You and Okay. Is it Thank You and Okay?
Got it right.
Yeah. And so you were a natural for us. And so this gave me an opportunity to really go more deeply into Shinju Suzuki. And as I did so, I just became more and more appreciative and really, really impressed. Much more so even in the last couple of months than a couple of years ago when I got reintroduced to him by chance.
You knew more about his teaching, what he had to say, the extent of the lectures and the material than almost anybody I've talked to who's not working with it, you know?
Well, all I had to do was read your book, David, which was, you know, excellent, and listen to a bunch of his lectures and go into the Suzuki recordings at San Francisco Zen Center, which really, as you well know, and you and I talk, they really have to be improved because the sound quality is not good. But I was interested enough where I called them up and I said, look, you know, I would really love to play people these recordings. And they were very amenable and they were very kind to let me do that. But, you know, when I clicked on Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and I heard him, you know, an expert has, you know, very few possibilities, or, you know, a beginner has many possibilities, an expert has few. It just sort of the hair stood on the back of my head because here was the voice of a man who, you know, was one of the iconic founders of Zen in America. And it was great. I loved it. I knew people would respond well if we were able to get solid and high quality audio, which you were able to provide for us, and I appreciated that. Yeah, and so it was fun to play some of his stuff and have you talk about it, because you were there. You were the the monk in the room, you know.
Yeah. And that was very helpful to me. There were two things I had done. One was last year when I got the book, Sean Ballett published it, the audio book for Crooked Cucumber. I put a lecture excerpt, a brief one at the end of each chapter. So that was a little bonus, right? Well, I had to work. I had to find audio that was clear and good. I work with audio. I work, you know, I do music and stuff, and I work with audio. So I improved it as well as I could. It's pretty low quality to begin with. And so that was one thing. And then with you, we took these, you used some of those excerpts, but used some from the Beginner's Mind lecture. So I just took the whole Beginner's Mind lecture audio, which actually well, the volume level was way too low, the way that Zen Center had it.
Yeah.
And you know, I ran it through a program, or through a batch file, I don't know what you call it, that I use for, it makes it audiobook ready, right? And so it brought the volume up, but it does things like bringing the mid-level up and stuff like that. And so I got some clips ready for you. But then, well, I thought, this is a good thing to do. And we have all these light edits. You know, on shunryusuzuki.com is where we've moved all the audio and the transcripts. And we have, you know, verbatim transcripts, many lectures. We don't have audio for to know if it's verbatim. We have every version we can, right? And we have light edits. We have, I don't know, we've of all the verbatim transcripts, we've done light edits of almost everything. And I thought, you know, there's no light edits of the audio. Yeah. And so because of doing that with you, I did Beginner's Mind, and then I did podcasts with it. I did 7 podcasts, just taking the little clips, playing it, playing it the way it was originally, and then playing the edited version I did, and I'd read it and do that. And that stuff you got me to do, you got me to read it and play it. Then I did the Calmness lecture. Unfortunately, almost all of the Los Altos tapes were lost. We've only got like 3 of them or something.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I'm going to start doing that. I've got other projects I'm working on. So little by little, I'm going to start going through the audio and editing it. I love doing it. My Lord, I get to listen to it, you know?
Yeah. And I love anytime I click on your website, David, and eqt.com, like Joanna Kiger, I knew of her a little bit, but I read your transcript of your interview with her in 1995 or something. And, you know, how she was engaged or involved with Gary Snyder, and they were both, I don't know how old they were, early 60s, you know? And they had to get married because it was looked, it was a real no-no for
absolutely
to be living together. So they were married for 4 years together and living in Japan. And that's just tremendous cultural history that is so valuable. And the work that you're doing with Suzuki Roshi in terms of cleaning up and editing his material is just so valuable. And you have 450 pieces or something like that. But what do they say that Jesus Christ, you know, if you read his stuff in the Bible, doesn't even add up to 2 hours of material. So it's not that you need hours and hours and hours.
No,
the last hour, you know, and a few hours of really great Suzuki Roshi stuff that can live forever is really, really valuable. And so my hat's off to you, you know, and what you're doing.
Yeah.
And just, that's why every chance we get, you know, we love to support you. And we have. John Tarrant was one of your earliest. Yeah, Tarrant was one of your earliest supporters, right? And
Definitely.
He took money out of his pocket, and Pacific Zen, what money we had, we donated some to you, and we, you know, we gave you a 501c3 platform and all that stuff. So yeah, we're happy to do that.
PZI is the fiscal sponsor of QQ Archives. Great. I really appreciate it. You're the best fiscal sponsor. And PZI doesn't take anything. Now that I shouldn't even tell you that, because that's not done. I mean, fiscal sponsors, they take, I looked into it when I first wanted one, and the Institute of Historical Studies was my first fiscal sponsor, and they still are one that I only use if somebody needs a non-religious nonprofit to get to.
No, it's all on the up and up tax-wise and everything. So I looked at it too. So
when I was looking for one, I knew people who ran, foundations that could be. I wanted 20% and stuff like that. And the Institute for Historical Studies took 5%. And I'm a member. That's the only group I'm a member of. Anyway, PZI. Well, John has done more than that. I lived with John for 8 or 9 years in his barn.
Until the building inspector discovered you.
Well, it was really time to go. For various reasons, it was time for Katrinka and me to leave. And that was good. That was all good.
It
was a little traumatic. It was traumatic for Katrinka, but I felt it was time to leave. But he's continued being just a really good friend. And I'll say one thing about living with John. You know, living with him that long, I never saw him be anything but gracious and kind and understanding. That really shows. I mean, if you're living with somebody, I mean, we were living in different buildings. But he was very understanding because, you know, various things happened that he could have gotten very angry or kicked me out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, I had a teenage son staying there a great deal who had, John was wonderful with him, but he was my son.
That was
challenging.
Clay.
That was challenging.
Clay, John, what can you say? I mean, he's just been tremendous, tremendous, tremendous. He's a cultural icon in my mind, you know.
Yeah.
He's created a kind of a Zen that is rich, you know, deeply, deeply rich. And I can't say enough about deepest appreciation, you know, deep bows, you know.
And I liked going over and sitting on Monday nights. I like when they had that place in Santa Rosa. And, you know, Katrinka, who's a manager, you know, she managed the Pelican Inn in Mira Beach for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And when she moved with me, she became a manager for PZI. She was setting up the sessions.
I know. That's how I got to know her. She did a lot of the shopping. She was kind of a COO for our retreats.
Yeah, and then she'd get me to drive a truck and unload things, and I'd end up cleaning up for a lot of them, which I love doing. You know, I love, you know, loading and unloading trucks, sweeping and stuff like that.
You also seem to really love fixing up old barns and dilapidated houses and that sort of thing, because you've done it time again. You did Mayumi's old house, and you fixed up John's barn, and you did some other stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Well, all right, back to the essential subject at hand. So that's anyway, I've been very impressed with your knowledge of Shunryu Suzuki and that, all that, and the teaching. And that's not even your lineage. Hey, tell us a little bit about your lineage up there, about PZI, the Pacific Zen Institute.
You had an interview with John Tarrant maybe a month or two ago, but and I would recommend anybody listen to that. That was really a great interview. But, you know, what we're doing at Pacific Zen is just so unique, and we have changed so much in the last 32 years, and it's been a hell of a ride. Because we started wearing robes and chanting all in Japanese and keisaku, kyosaku, you know, the stick and running the doksan. And, you know, it was very traditional. And John had a reputation when he was in Hawaii with Aitken for being very traditional, evidently. But we transformed and we evolved, and I give John all the credit here. We embraced the arts, and we embraced poetry and writing and dance and
music.
And we've integrated all of these into our practice, and it's developed such a rich and satisfying culture. And I think the reason we can do that is the confidence that we have in our practice. And again, you know, I think this part largely comes from John, but, you know, something he's been able to spread around with in his own group is just the confidence in awakening and in transformation, and you know, particularly with regard to the koan work and using koans in as kind of instruments, but just companions to awakening, gates to awakening, and so it's been that deep confidence that has allowed us to experiment, and I think not only stay on the money, but stay right on top of the money, you know, the light that shines, you know, in all things. So, I've just been so happy to be, you know, part of this organization for a long time in different iterations, you know, as a business person, as a, you know, as the president of the organization, as a teacher, as the everything, you know.
As a student.
Fabulous. As a student, longest as a student, you know, still a student, you know, beginner's mind. I'm getting that tattooed on the back of my arm, so I can look at that every day, maybe every moment of every day.
I'm grateful. You know, I'm grateful for a lot of things constantly, and one of them is my relationship with PZI and John and you and David Weinstein and so many neat people I've known
I had a conversation with Peter Coyote, and I had met Peter back in 1982. He had just got into, maybe he had just shot E.T. or maybe he was going to shoot E.T. I don't know. It was about that time, you know, when he was starting to get into the movies big time. And he picked me up in Marin, and we drove up to Ring of Bones Endo together and did a session with Aitken up there. He had studied with Aitken for a little while. So, of course, he didn't remember me because he's had 10,000 people stream through his life. But what really impressed me recently in doing my homework in preparation for his coming and join us in the Luminary series was how deep he is. You know, I mean, he is really great, and he's fun, and he's educated, and he's disciplined, and you know, he's just got all these wonderful, wonderful qualities that, had I not been preparing to interview him, I wouldn't know. It'd just be, oh, Peter Coyote. Yeah, he's the Zen guy, or, you know, actor guy. And yeah, he did turn out a couple books and, you know, that sort of thing. But so I'm really looking forward to our meeting. Like I said, we were supposed to talk for about 20 minutes yesterday, and we ended up talking an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and 15 minutes and just going on and on, deciding that we're only partially done with our conversation. So, he'll be a pleasure to have on. Yeah. And it's a great opportunity for me, and you probably realize this a bit, is when you get to know other people's lives and other people's bodhicitta, you know, their way-seeking mind, and what brought them from here there to here, you know, this moment in this place. It's often very moving. And to see a Peter Hirschhoff. Peter Hirschhoff is a wonderful guy. You should talk to him. Red Pine, like I said, Red Pine and Peter Hinton is a wonderful guy. He's tremendous translator of poetry. So there are a lot of talented people out there, and I just love getting to know them a bit.
Yeah. I think my podcast with Bill Porter, Red Pine, went on 2 hours or something.
I should listen to it. Yeah. We're going to have him back, and we're going to have a number of people back if we can. And then we have Naomi Shihab Nye coming. The poet, and we have Jane Hirschfield coming, who is a good friend of yours, a poet also.
Oh, yeah, and that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and we have Joan Sutherland, who's coming. She's going to be publishing a new book, and she's got a really unique and interesting view on environmental, you know, Zen politics, you know, the screwed up world we're currently in. And how to practice in the midst of that. So she's got a great, unique voice in that regard, and I'm looking forward to having her and understanding her new book.
She's very sharp. My gosh. Yeah, indeed. Hey, I'll tell you somebody you should have is who I had last Saturday, one week ago, Andy Ferguson.
You mentioned him. Yeah.
Oh, that! Listen to that. That's really interesting stuff. And Andy knows his Chinese, his Zen, good Lord, that guy's got a brain, I'll tell you. And
Well, I love his Zen Ancestors book. I source it all the time. And some of the stories that he has in there have never been published elsewhere, you know. Zen's Chinese Heritage, it's right here. I have it in my left hand. So. Could you send me his email, if you remember? Could you send me his contact information?
Yeah. And if I don't... Ask me, remind me.
I'll send you an email.
My poor, feeble senior citizen mind is very pleasantly emptying out.
What did Suzuki say about senior citizen's mind? Is that your next book of transcripts?
Well, he thought being 60 was old. And that's, you know, for those older Japanese, it was. I mean, retirement was set in Japan at 55, you know, they sort of thought, you know, over 55, that's it, you know. You're just, you know the term, I think it's Nuruba, wet leaves?
Nuruba.
Yeah, that's a retired husband.
Yeah, nudity, that makes sense, the wet leaves, sure.
That's a husband who's retired. It's just like wet leaves, you know, you can't rake them, you know, they're... I'll tell you one thing Suzuki said about it. He says he feels like he's very young, you know, until he looks in the mirror. and he goes, oh, I guess I'm not that young. All right. Well, look, is there anything else you'd like to say before we go our separate ways?
Yeah, when are you coming back to the States next? And it'd be fun to get together.
I have no plans to go to the States, but I probably will. I don't want to drive. It's very big. Everybody's got guns and are shooting each other. And and things here are so much more stable, you know, in a way. I mean, people here are... America's like a zoo, you know. People here, the Muslims, the Christians, the Hindus, they're all, you know, pretty copacetic with each other, and everything goes pretty smooth. And people are polite, and there's problems, and there's a lot of stuff beneath the surface. But it's very pleasant being here, and people treat each other well. I mean, it's just very nice being here.
Yeah, yeah.
I love relating to people here. I don't know about going to America. I want them to come here. My son, Clay, I mean, we're communicating all the time with both my sons, but I haven't seen Clay now in 8.5 years.
Oh, my.
Kelly's been here a couple of times, and... you know,
have you not been back since you
went
to Buckingham?
No.
Oh, I see.
I've not been back.
Because I know Katrinka's come through once in a while.
She goes back every year. That's our main expense.
Yeah.
That's another reason. It's expensive to go there, and America is expensive. Well, the main thing I think of is the expense, and then having to travel. I don't like to get in cars and go places anymore. We mainly walk places or go short distances. We're going to go. We're going to take a few days off. Tomorrow we're leaving. And it's 30 minutes away.
I read Eat, Pray, Love, and I love, and that was a pretty fun book.
Eat, Pray, Love. Oh, yeah. That filled Bali with women seeking mates. Really? I'm not kidding. You know, I mean, there was this enormous number, and that was still happening when we arrived, and they go to Ubud, and, you know, it gave this idealistic picture of Bali that was just, you know, I mean, there's plenty of downside,
Well, David, my printer, I'm getting knocks on my office door here, and my printer is activated. Somebody's printing stuff. So, I think we've got some business to take care of here, but you know, I want to thank you so much. I mean, you're just your lovely spirit, your hard work, the treasures that you are maintaining and creating, and it's just tremendous. I'm so deeply thankful for what you're doing.
Well, thanks for reminding me. It's just, I just think of it, you know, it's like a job. I got all this stuff to do, and I'm compulsive. And I forget it has any value or anything.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
That's good. Well, what you're doing has value too, and I really enjoyed communicating with you. And let's keep it up and
let's stay in touch. Yeah.
Let's stay in touch. Maybe I'll get over there, or maybe you'll get over here. That's more likely.
Maybe.
I'd say. Okay. Well, thanks a lot, John.
All right,
Joseph.
My friend. Yeah.
And take care and say hi to John.
Oh, okay. Will do.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
So thanks a lot, John Joseph. That was great. That was great. Wow. An interesting path you've been on. And continue on. This has been a Cuke Audio podcast. I'm DC Poopa of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sonora with Doggett Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.